And welcome back. You're listening to Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, with me in the studio, Dr. Habib Dagher, professor of civil and structural engineering at the University of Maine. He's also the director of the Advanced Structures and Composites Center. And John Ferland is vice president of project development for Ocean Renewable Power Company. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. And we have a tweet and a question. If Europe built their first offshore windmill in 1991, Habib Dagher, why has it taken so long for Maine and the U.S. to catch up?
Very good question. Europe actually did not have cheap electricity or cheap energy like we have. They're paying right now $78 a gallon today in gasoline prices. They've looked at renewable energy longer before we had to try to reduce their costs. They also have developed a major policy requirements throughout Europe to meet certain emission standards and CO2 emissions and other standards for global climate change related issues. So it's the policy framework in Europe as well as the cost of energy that they've had to pay for that drove them to go faster. Now, of course, we're coming to the point we are starting to pay near $3.50 and $4 a gallon, and hopefully not very soon we won't go much higher than that. We're looking at alternatives as well. The thing, though, is we have learned from that experience. We're not starting back where they started in 1991. We're not going to put fixed-base turbines in the water. We think we can do it less expensively by floating these turbines, prefabricating them near shore, and towing them out. So we have learned from their experience and building on that here in the U.S.
We also have an email. Norway's Statoil? Is that Statoil?
Yes.
Which is a private company proposing an offshore wind power project as well off Maine. Is it off Booth Bay?
Correct.
Are deep sea wind and Statoil collaborating, or are they competitors?
We're collaborating. We're collaborating very well. As you know, floating wind turbine there are no commercial floating wind turbine farms in the world today. And there's a race across the world to develop floating wind turbine technologies. For example, Japan right now has funded a $200 million project to put three floating turbines, large turbines, off the coast of Fukushima. Just because they're not going to do nuclear off Fukushima right now. They've made that decision, and they're looking at deep water floating technology as a way to do that. There's a dozen of projects across the world competing right now. In Maine, we're working very closely with Statoil, sharing information between deep sea wind and Statoil to ensure that both projects move successfully forward. And there's more than one way to, if you wish, skin the cat, and different ways to design a floating wind turbine. So we're learning from Statoil, they're learning from us, and hopefully it's going to help everybody reduce the cost of energy.
All right, let's go to Lewiston and Chris. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Keith. Your guests are great to listen to today. I've got a question, though. If you look at state-by-state comparisons and you see how clean, for lack of a better word, energy generation mixes are, especially electricity generation, Maine ranks right up there among the best in terms of clean electricity generation. So there are a lot of people that are a little skeptical about the rationale for why we actually need to invent a better mousetrap. What we have is darn good. But they talk about how much greater the potential is for offshore turbines to provide reliable power versus onshore turbines. It would take thousands of onshore turbines to reach the critical mass to where it could actually replace or displace baseload plants. And thereby, reduce emissions. With offshore, I have a question. What do you think, Habib, is your critical mass threshold, if you will, to where you invest in enough offshore turbines to reach a critical mass that would actually replace or displace some conventional baseload power? And how much would it cost to get there?
Yeah, I think you've said a lot of things. Thanks for your questions. Let me go back and say we're really not comparing offshore or land-based wind or picking winners and losers. And I think there's different places where it makes sense to put wind power and other places where it doesn't make sense to put wind power. So if you're going to put it next to somebody's homes or on top of a mountain where people don't want to look at it, you don't put it there. So, but there are other places on land where it makes sense to put wind power. If you look at the Midwest, if you look at Iowa, for example, where they're at 25% of their energy comes from wind right now, electricity comes from wind, they don't mind putting them in the farmlands, and they're actually very happy putting them in the farmlands. So I think, we're not really trying to compare wind to offshore here. But going back to offshore and your question on offshore, right now what we're doing is research and development to develop cost-effective offshore wind turbines. We're not going to go out there and build anything at the large scale until we have cost-effective technology that we believe in. We believe, though, that we've put together a plan, very careful plan, over the next 10 years to get us there. Our goal is to reach 10 cents a kilowatt hour by 2020. That's our goal for electricity, which will compete with other forms of energy or electricity. As I said, there's 150 nuclear power plants worth of wind off the coast of Maine. The whole state of Maine needs 2.4 nuclear power plants. 2.4 gigawatts powers the whole state of Maine. We got 150 of these out there. So does it make sense for us to invest in research and development to figure out how to bring cost-effectively this energy, reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, stabilize our prices? That's what we're trying to do.
Does this whole idea depend on the assumption that, A, energy costs are going to go way up and stay up, and, B, that politically and in terms of our political policies, we're going to need energy independence from the Middle East and from other countries? Are those two assumptions in the business plan or the future modeling?
Actually, in terms of business plan, nobody really can predict what's going to happen to electricity prices in the next 10 years or 20 years. You can make assumptions. EIA has assumptions and others. Our assumption is very simple. Anybody here in Maine can actually run the numbers themselves. If you go to the Maine PUC website, Maine Public Utilities Commission website, you can look at the cost of electricity to the consumers over the last 10 years. We went from about 4 cents a kilowatt hour in 2000 to about 7 to 8 cents a kilowatt hour right now. And if you can draw a straight line and extrapolate that was a very simple thing, you can try to estimate where we're going to be in 2020. Okay, we've done a lot of that. We've done more sophisticated analyses. And our goal is that the existing growth rates of the cost of electricity, not assuming anything crazy is going to happen, just the existing growth rates the last 10 years, if you assume and project that over the next 10 years, our goal is to beat those costs. Our goal is to be below those costs. Whether we're successful or not depends on the R&D. That's why we're doing the R&D.
1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Kenny Bunk and RJ. Hi, RJ.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm involved in salmon restoration in southern Maine, and I'm not totally satisfied with the previous answer, the earlier answer about fish impact and animal migration, like whales. For example, how would we know about your taking of an endangered species? But that's actually not a question. I have three questions I'd like to
okay, we're,
ask.
RJ, we're going to have to give you one because your cell is very dicey. So give us one, and then we may have to.
Okay. What is the life expectancy of the generators, and are they under a FERC review? Is this process under FERC review?
Well, thank you for that question. The most fundamental permit that you need in this business is a FERC permit, along with a state of Maine permit.
And FERC is the federal
Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So there is substantial federal and state agency oversight on this project, and we much like we're pioneering technology and pioneering a new industry, we're also pioneering the environmental monitoring approach. And the University of Maine is doing all of our fisheries analysis. We have a partnership with the New England Aquarium on our mammal program, and we're very excited about the work that's being done because we think it's world class. It'll set an industry standard, and so far the relevant agencies and environmental organizations that we've been working with have been very, very supportive of not only our industry occurring in Maine waters, but with the high quality of the scientific information that we're gathering as we look to how marine life interacts with the systems.
Yeah, and Habib Dagher, what about migratory seabirds and the impact that these wind turbines might have on their patterns?
These are very important questions. We don't know all the answers yet. We're trying to figure out those answers. There's very little known about exactly where all migratory seabirds travel in the Gulf of Maine. We're trying to establish those by collecting data. There's a lot of groups across the state of Maine trying to collect data. At the University of Maine, we have bird biologists who are actually trying to get some of that data. We've put some radars in some of the islands. But there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of gaps out there. So until we have all that information, that picture in place, it's going to be hard for us to tell, put it here or not put it there. So, but our goal is find out where these migratory birds travel, do the science, and then locate these farms away of the migratory patterns. That's the goal.
Okay, quick call to Belfast. And Steve, you've got about 15 seconds.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say there is a lot of support out in the general public for what you both are doing, and I appreciate it. And I just am amazed the country that produces the Hoover Dam and sends a man to the moon, that we can't get more vocal support from people to encourage and support, especially the work at the University of Maine, and to be the front leader as well as the innovator to help produce a better economy.
Okay, Steve, yep, thanks. Long 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. Habib, John, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you, Keith.
Appreciate it. Dr. Habib Dogger, Professor of Civil and Structural Engineering at the University of Maine, also the Director of the Advanced Structures and Composite Center, and John Furland, Vice President of Project Development for Ocean Renewable Power Company. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.